Well, good afternoon, K-Goat listeners. This is Lori Beckel coming to you with another edition of What's Upstream. Without my partner, I think this is the last show until Mark gets back next week, I believe. He's had a wonderful time in Italy, I'm sure. But we are coming to you on KYGT LPFM. 102.7 and 103.9 on the listening dial and streaming worldwide at clearcreekradio.com. I get to host my favorite ladies here in the studio today. Yes, indeed. It's our third Wednesday of the month program with the History Women. So Chris Bradley and Lou Howard will be with us here in just a second. We do have a couple of short PSAs. One, this very important one about K-Goat marking its 31st year. Please consider making a contribution to help us stay on the air. Click on the Donate Now button at the top of our website, clearcreekradio.com. You can make a one-time gift or set up a regular payment of any amount. Clear Creek Radio, Inc. is an exempt 501c3 charitable organization. Your gift will be tax deductible. Keep listening and help us keep community radio alive and well in Clear Creek County. Thank you so much. The other thing I'd just like to mention is that the National No Kings protest will take place also here in Clear Creek County on March 28th, a week from Saturday. We will meet at the 103 Bridge, Overpass Bridge. Bring your signs and your costumes and your feelings about No Kings in this country. We will start at 11 o'clock. And we will march down the mall and finish in front of City Hall. Again, that is March 28th. So thank you so much about that, too. And we're going to, I can hardly wait for this show because it's, hold on one second, Chris, I need to turn your microphone on.
Oh. It would be a much better show if my mic
wasn't
turned on.
No.
Gotta hear you.
There, test.
All right. Now we have our guest mic'd. That's okay. Really important here. So, Chris, why don't you,
you want me to preface the show? I will do that.
Get us kicked off.
We have such fun at the end of each show trying to figure out what the next show will be. And last time, Lou mentioned two very interesting gentlemen, Edward Berthoud and W.A.H. Loveland, and so she has some information on them. And then I decided, well, I could talk a little bit more about them in their 20th and 21st century lives with the passes that bear their names, and also some on roads and rights of way, because that's something I studied for years working for the county. But I would just start by saying there was a book written by Marshall Sprague number of years ago called The Great Gates. And, you know, we drive these things so quickly now, we don't really think of them as the kind of gates that they probably presented to everyone who's traveling west. So, Marshall Sprague, here's a shout out to you. I think you are long past. But anyway, we'll start with Lou and then come back to me, and I will bore you to tears about roads and rights of way.
I doubt that.
Oh, yeah. Will not be boring. I just thought it would be a little bit fun to talk about the two men, because I don't even know if everyone understands that these passes were named after two different men. And they have a lot of similarities, so I thought we'd kind of compare their similarities and their differences. And we just have to be so thankful for these men, because they did so much for Colorado. So we'll start with Edward Lewis Berthoud. And he was born March 29th, 1828, in Geneva, Switzerland. But he immigrated to America in 1830 with his parents at the age of 2. And he grew up in central New York. Another New Yorker, attending Union College in 1845, which he did graduate with honors, by the way. So 2 years later, then, Mr. Loveland was born May 30th, 1826, in Barnstable, Massachusetts.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's where my
I've got relatives from there.
Yeah, my grandmother has roots in Barnstable.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Along with other pilgrims.
A lot of pilgrims there. Yeah. And just about everybody, they go somewhere close to Massachusetts if they've immigrated across the United States. But anyway, so they both had military experiences, and Loveland's military experience was in the Mexican-American War. He was a wagon master in the Illinois Volunteers, and he was wounded in the leg and received medical treatment in the military hospital in Mexico City. So he was honorably medically discharged and returned to America in 1848. And now Berthoud, his military experience was in the Civil War, and he was in there the 1861 to 1865. He did the whole bit, and he mustered out as a captain, not surprisingly, right? Mm-hmm. So Berthoud, so in 1851, Berthoud worked as an engineer for the Panama Railroad in South America until 1855, and I was really surprised at that. So he was already tied into the railroads then. He returned to the States and was an engineer.
Can you imagine getting to South America back then?
On a horse?
On a boat, I would guess.
Yeah. Because I don't know about going down through the country.
Yeah.
Amazing. So he returned to the States and was an engineer in Kentucky, Ohio, Indiana, and Wisconsin. And he was in Leavenworth, Kansas when he married Helen. And from there, they went to Golden in 1860. And I don't think they had any children. Yeah. I have not been able to find anything about children. So now Loveland, on the other hand, he married Felina, who died 2 years after their marriage in 1854. And then he married Miranda, and they did have children. And he first went to California for the gold rush, and then he ended back in Golden. So
a yonder sider, they called them.
Yes. So they both ended up in Golden, 1860.
So would you explain that, Chris? Yonder cider
was the term that they used. Think of the gold rush in California as 1849.
Okay.
And out here is 1859.
Okay.
And so the people who went out to California and dug around for a while and then went home were the yonder ciders that came out here.
Yeah.
Yonder side.
Yeah, but that would not be for here because we were 1859.
Right.
So that would
They'd be coming after the start.
Right.
Wow.
Anyway.
Okay.
Right.
So these men were not the pioneers of Golden, obviously, Mr. Golden was, but they're
just early.
Yeah, they weren't as early as he was, but they were the people who made Golden, these two men. Mm. But so I'll tell you a little bit more. Loveland was a businessman, and he owned a mercantile shop in Golden at Washington and First Avenue, and he was highly successful. Now, though, I looked it up, and there's townhouses there. Bummer. I would like to have seen that. But anyway, he sold groceries, provisions, produce, and mining tools. He built a 2.5-story, 24-by-40 building to house the merchandise. And then there's several articles about him traveling back to the States because we were a territory then, and he would buy merchandise and come back on the train with all this merchandise. So he was very industrious. And so But Berthoud, he spent his career working as an engineer mostly. He was the chief engineer for the Colorado Central Railroad.
Really?
And you will like this, he was the chief engineer for the Georgetown Loop.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So he was a founding, but, and people who, my grandson goes to the school nights, he did not know all of this. So
and he should.
He should know this, but he was a founding member of the School of Mines. Yep. And he was the first register and a member of the Board of Trustees and a professor. Hmm. He was well informed on geology, botany, zoology, paleontology, meteorology, and other scientific subjects that I can't even
other ologies?
Yeah. Other ologies, yeah.
Those, all those
he was an
ologies.
Ologist.
Yeah, that's what he was. And he did many of the surveys for William Loveland. And he was also the president of the school board for Jefferson County. So,
oh, interesting.
So I don't think people probably relate all this that he had to do with education. And but he wasn't the mercantile. Yeah. But so Loveland was the president of the Colorado Central Railroad. And here's an excerpt from an article because it really explains. And it's W.A.H. Loveland, and it's important to know that he went by Bill, but there are two other Lovelands that are William Loveland's buried in the cemeteries in Colorado, so you have to make sure you get the right
W-A-H.
One, and he's the oldest one. So,
and related or not related?
That
do you
I
know?
Didn't research.
I don't know. Yeah,
it's possible, but I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
So it's understood that Mr. Reynolds, okay, so let's see. Oh, let me go. W.A.H. Loveland of Golden City, who is using his money and influence to forward this work, is now on his way to New York for the purpose of settling the preliminaries for the coming work of grading at the earliest possible moment. And this is when he's trying to get the railroad up to Central City. It is understood that Mr. Reynolds, an agent of the company, is empowered to erect suitable works for the manufacture of the iron at Golden City, where the iron, lime, firebrick, fuel all lay within a stone's throw of each other in inexhaustible quantities. But anyway, if we were doing railroads, we could go more into that.
We may
that
do that another time. Yeah.
But yeah. So Berthoud, along with Jim Bridger, found the pass now known as Berthoud Pass. And I've read that other people might have found this pass as well, but he's the surveyor. He's the one that made it happen. So, and Chris will be talking about more
about
those
more
passes.
About that.
Now, so politically, they were both Democrats. Loveland was active as a member of the Colorado Territory Council, and he was highly active. And Berthoud, not so much, because he was busy with the school mines. So, but Loveland was the mayor of Golden in 1874-75, and Berthoud was the city engineer and mayor in 1890-91. Their lives just so much paralleled. Is that the right word?
Yeah. Now, so, are they contemporaries?
Yes.
So they probably were good friends.
They were
good friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, Berthoud worked for Loveland, basically, doing all the surveys for the railroad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, they were good friends. And so I'll have to describe these men a little bit to you because you can't see the pictures, which I wish you could. But anyway.
Yeah, we haven't had much luck with holding pictures up to microphones.
We haven't. No, just the room get to see them. So Berthoud is described as a small, wiry, agile man with dark hair, a beard, and blue eyes. And he's very handsome. I think he has kind of a pointy chin, and his beard is well groomed, so you can kind of tell that.
Military
it's not
man.
Just, yes, they're both very distinguished looking men. And so I couldn't, and the reason I found that is because, of course, his Civil War record, it had a description of him.
Yeah.
But I couldn't find anything about Loveland's physical traits. But from his pictures, I'd say he's pretty much the same description, except I think he might be taller, possibly, because he kind of looks taller. And he has very heavy sideburns and no mustache or actual beard, but he has really heavy sideburns. So anyway, great men. They did a lot. So each of them have a pass named after them. Each of them have a town named after them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And surprisingly, Loveland actually owned Block 90 in Idaho Springs.
Oh.
Because I'm doing all the accession records,
right.
Tax assessment records.
I didn't
and
know
it was assessed at $400 in 1890 to 94. So I guess he was just kind of making
probably
an investment.
Yeah.
He could put it.
Yeah.
Maybe I've had a mercantile here, and there were plenty of them. But
yeah, it sounds like he's just holding the land.
And he's just so busy.
Yeah.
I mean, building railroads. So William Bill Loveland. He died on December 17, 1994, in Lakewood. And he's buried at the Fairmont Cemetery.
Okay. 1894?
1894.
Oh, yeah.
Remember?
Yeah. Okay, 1894.
I
was going to say.
No, it's,
goodness.
This
sakes,
is the media.
A long time.
I said Thanksgiving was coming up when we were talking before.
Yeah, 1894. I'm
yes.
Sorry, guys.
Nope.
He was 68 years old. And then Edward Bertha died on June 13, 1908, in Golden. And he's actually buried in the Golden Cemetery.
Oh, well,
and he was 80 years old, okay. So he lived a little bit longer.
Yeah.
And who knows why, but actually, both of those are ripe old age for the time.
Yep. And they did a lot.
I'm just amazed at how much they did in their lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yep. they made such drastic and important changes here and developed
some cool stuff.
So much. But anyway, there's lots to read about these men. Just their obituaries are just so interesting to read, but we won't do that today. But
Berthet has a biography written about him, I think. I don't know if Loveland does.
Yeah, I only found one. For Berthet,
yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
And Berthet wrote a history of the town of Golden as well. So I'm
going to
read that from his, because I'm sure it's probably very accurate, you know, because he was there.
The city of Berthet and the city of Loveland are named after these two men.
Yes, right. They are.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Oh, and Loveland is confusing to everybody because Loveland and Loveland Pass aren't.
Anywhere close
so,
to each other.
No, but the two passes are in our county.
Yeah, they are.
So we can say, hey,
yeah, we can talk, we claim
they
them.
Are still our men.
Yeah, they claim
they
them.
Are our men. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Do you want to switch over? Do I get to jump in here?
Jump in there and go for it.
Well, you see, so I have always enjoyed the study of roads. And for one thing, I would have been a lousy pioneer. I would have just waited for there to be a railroad. I mean, these people that are coming across. I mean, imagine these guys. It's 1858. They are back in Iowa or wherever. And they hear rumors of gold being found down around Auraria. And they set out here. And they come to what we now call Denver. And then they see the mountains. And so, okay. You know, now
there's
it's up to you. There's gold and then there
are hills.
But how do you get to them?
Yeah.
And so the people who are the gatekeepers of the great gates, as Marshall Sprague would talk about, you know, how do you get up there? And so bear with me as I'm going to jump backwards a little bit here and say generally they start by trying to go up waterways because waterways are generally reasonable. Well, if you've driven US 6 out of Golden, there are a number of pinch points that come up pretty quickly. And it isn't until Mr. Noble develops dynamite and the railroad comes through that they are really able to bash their way through there. So if they're coming out of Golden, they go up Guy Gulch Road, which nobody ever liked that much. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I don't know who Mr. Guy is, and I don't mean to insult his relatives, but it doesn't seem to take hold. So they start up that way. Then they start up Mount Vernon Canyon, which is wider, I-70. We know that. Where are we driving up there? Mm-hmm. And so they start there, and they get up to what is, okay, if you're driving from here over to Evergreen or Bergen Park, and you go across what I call a Soda Creek Bridge, you know where that is, the bridge over I-70 there, mm-hmm. Below the school. And just below that, so they would come up out of Golden, and they'd come up Lookout Mountain there. And they would get to that point, and then they would go up to the top of that little ridge, and then they would shoot almost straight down to what is now US 6. Mm-hmm. But it would be on the west side of the real pinch point. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're driving up US 6, do not look at this while you're driving. Make someone else drive, and you will rapidly be able to tell, oh, that's been blown out. There wasn't a way to get to drive straight up. Anyway, so you would take your stage up from Mount Vernon Canyon and to the area below the Soda Creek Bridge, and you would go up to the little ridge, and then you would go down almost straight. And they used to call that the Big Hill. And when I was first studying this, I thought the Big Hill was Floyd Hill. No, no, no. The Big Hill was right there, and it was almost straight down to the vicinity of what we now call Forks of the Creek. In order for these guys to take a stagecoach down, quite often the passengers would get out to walk. I would be walking.
Yes.
They would tie up the stage and let it down a little bit at a time. But then once they got to the bottom, it was fairly flat on the way, relatively flat, on the way to Black Hawk in Central City. And the arrival of a stage in Central City was a great deal. So they celebrated it quite a bit. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there was a gentleman who had a ranch at the top in that area, and his name was Merrill Floyd. And you can guess where I'm going with this.
Yes.
And there is a hill,
and
not
always,
the Big Hill. I know a lot of people want to know, why is it Floyd Hill and who is Floyd? And it's not Floyd the barber from... It is Mr. Floyd. It is Merrill Floyd. And he decided to start a toll road from Idaho Springs up to the top of what we now call Floyd Hill. So, okay, you're still... You have this, you're coming up Mount Vernon, then you go down a relatively, it would be nicer than the Big Hill, which would just have been a mess. You could get down to the bottom of Floyd Hill and then turn to go over to Idaho Springs. But then you'd still, and so you were in Idaho Springs, which would be one destination, but you still wanted to get to Central City and you didn't want to do Guy Gulch or Lord knows the Big Hill. So then they go up Virginia Canyon. And what I call Virginia Canyon Wagon Road today is referred to as Two Brothers. Mm-hmm. And it goes straight up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then don't take your car there.
Well,
I mean, you can do four-wheel drive.
Yes, but anyway. But it was steep, and it was a straight shot, and they went up and down into Central, actually into Russell Gulch, and then into Central. Then the rest, continuing further to Empire and Georgetown, pretty flat, you know. Mm-hmm. But if you're in Central City, you would go up Eureka Gulch, and then you'd come down York Gulch. Now, it took me, it was that moment of great realization, I guess, when I realized there was a road in York Gulch called Old Stage Road.
Yes.
And you know what it was? It was the Old Stage
Road. It was. I thought it probably was.
It was. But, you know, it was one of those eureka moments where you slap yourself and go, oh, it was probably the Old Stage Road.
I had no idea they did it that
way. So anyway, so it would come down there. But we are then coming up to Empire and coming up to Georgetown. And as soon as people arrive one place, they want to get to the next, right? That's a given. Mm-hmm. So that's where Mr. Berthoud and Mr. Loveland come in. And Berthoud's pass is very early. You hear it referred to as Berthoud Pass by 1862. Mm-hmm. But I believe, see, this is what you were talking about as to, you know, who discovered it. There's a difference between discover, see,
and survey it, making it happen.
Right. And a couple of the old timers from Empire saw this saddle in the mountain and they said that we could go there. But Berthoud was the one who surveys it. But what he surveys at that time is a different road than our current road. The saddle is the same. If you come west of Empire, you're driving up US 40 now, and on the left there is a picnic area. And right about in that area, the old road just starts up at a very steep clip. Because the old wagon roads and horse roads, they didn't care if they were steep. They would just go ahead, and the shortest route was the best route. Mm-hmm. So they do that.
So they cross the creek?
As a matter of fact, outside of Empire, it starts on the north side of the creek.
Okay.
Continues going up there, mm-hmm. and goes further up around Hoop Creek, if you've ever stopped at Hoop Creek, mm-hmm. and then on up. And then coming out of Georgetown and Silver Plume, they referred to it as the Highline Road that would take off from Bakerville area and continue up at a pretty good clip. Now, I don't know exactly where that is. I think people who have hiked the area and skied it probably have seen traces of that old road. But it wasn't the type of horseshoe bends, as many as we have now. But that was the Highline Road. The one that they liked the most was Argentine Pass, which goes out of Georgetown. And if you've ever been up to the town site of Waldorf, it would go up through, it was the Georgetown Snake River Wagon Road, start in Georgetown, go up, kind of take the turnoff for the Waldorf Road, and then continue up by the creek, and it would go up to Argentine Pass.
And this was before the railroad?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Because the railroad really changes things quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And so at this point in time, and the railroad, even when it comes through, doesn't go to all these out-of-the-way places, mm-hmm. but it changes transportation considerably. So Argentine passes there, and it's relatively, it's not smooth, but straight on the side outside of Waldorf. But if you've been to the top to look at where Argentine Pass goes down into Summit County, mm-hmm.
Down Peru Creek.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And it was a great place for them to go because down there you have the Philadelphia Mine, you have little towns like Silveropolis and Argentine and all of those. Anyway, so the preferred route to Summit County was Argentine Pass. Mm. Now let's see. Well, let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, I'll talk about railroads and cars. And if I hope I haven't put anybody to sleep yet. This is a topic I like.
I'm totally interested.
Okay, more to follow.
We hope all of you are as well. We'll be right back after a short listening to music break.
You can be sure I've been grinding till I'm grinding to a halt. Sometimes it's the right thing to cut the cord. You've been holding on hard, but your hands get sore. Sometimes it's worth it, but sometimes you wonder what for. And I will do all right, but in truth, I might maybe stumble around in some deep evil night. And I will miss the times when it was so right. Oh, it seems so long ago, so long. This is my swan song.
Right, this is Lori Beckel coming back with our History Women and interesting conversation about passes and roads and men who built them.
And getting from here to there.
From here to there. So Christine Bradley is here and Lou Howard is here. And we will just continue with this very interesting conversation. Take it away, Chris.
Take it away. Well, I'm not going to talk a lot about railroads because I think they really should be their own program.
Yeah.
But Mr. Loveland was very much involved with railroads and with the Colorado Central, Colorado and Southern, Colorado, Breckenridge, and Leadville, and the Union Pacific being the routes that continue up the valley.
And we talk about them. The railroads up here, but actually and the railroads also went to Cheyenne.
Yes, yeah, which is why the town of Loveland is named up there. And Berthoud, I don't know why Berthoud isn't. Anyway, I digress. Okay. So they've got the way to come up here, but it's just not as convenient as they would like to get up here by stage. And so obviously there is a real interest in starting a railroad, and by the time Alfred Noble invents dynamite, then you can start getting up the canyons to reach Central City and
gone are the
Silver
pinch
Plume.
Points.
Yes, gone are the pinch points. Boom, boom goes London. Boom, Paris. So then. They start that, and you start getting the railroads coming up here. And, of course, you've got mining, and so there's a lot of investment money that is being included in all of this. And the narrow gauge road then runs from Golden up to Forks of the Creek, where it splits and goes both to Black Hawk and Central City and on up into Georgetown. Silver Plume, I didn't mean to forget you. Silver Plume and then up to Graymont around Bakerville, where it stops. But that involves Mr. Loveland. He's involved in that. So let me swing back a little bit more to where do I want to swing back to? No, we'll stay there. Okay. Because at that point in time, Loveland and his investors, the people of the Union Pacific, are really wanting to get over to Leadville. Everybody wants to get to Leadville. By 1877, the carbonate camp of Leadville strikes silver very much, and there's a lot there, and gee, all they need is a good mill and a good way to get in and out of there. So there's a race on to provide railroad service to the town of Leadville, and Loveland thinks that the best way to do that is obviously to continue up Clear Creek Valley and go on over into Leadville. Now, it would have been a heck of a run. The loop wasn't built yet. Details, these guys would just draw things out on a map, like with a Sharpie.
Straight lines.
Yeah. Here, we can go here. There's one early map that shows a railroad coming into Georgetown, and then it takes a turn and goes up over Union Pass into Empire, and then just goes to Berthoud, over Berthoud Pass. Anyway, but these guys, Loveland and his engineers, are trying to find a route that will get to be the first one to make it to Leadville, and they lose that. The Denver Rio Grande Railroad gets over there first. So that sort of puts a damper on their plans, although they keep working on it and they keep trying to survey both sides of what we today would call Loveland Pass. Now, the road up Loveland Pass was called the High Line, and like I say, I don't know exactly where it is. It's probably on that Montezuma quadrangle map, but anyway. Mm-hmm. So, okay, so things are there. Railroads are wonderful, and they can bring equipment and people. They can ship ore out and all of that. Well, around the turn of the century, lo and behold, we start getting cars. Mm-hmm. And people really like cars. They like cars a lot.
They
still like cars a lot. And they like being able to get into their own rig and drive where they want to go. But there's a very major problem, and that is that the early cars didn't have fuel injection. So if it came to driving up, say, Virginia Canyon Road, you'd probably have to drive backwards.
Oh, really?
Because the fuel is in the back part of the vehicle,
and
the engine's
the engine.
In front. There's no way to get the gas in, so there
now,
are quite a few
a
roads.
Picture.
There's a picture. And then talking to Henry Anderson and Buff Rutherford and some of the others who remember some of the earlier days of traveling these roads, it was quite an adventure. But you know, those old Model Ts and Model As would go just about anywhere. But there's a very major change in the road system. system that happens right, or it starts happening about 1910. As cars become more popular and they start talking about the good roads movement, and you start getting a Colorado Department of Highways, and there's a wonderful map that they ask the counties to prepare maps of their automobile roads. And I think that what they are doing is somebody is in Denver putting these maps together and saying, I don't know, where do they meet? And because really you didn't drive from Denver to Steamboat Springs. I mean, that would be a 2 or 3 day drive before automobiles came in. Anyway, so they start at this point to redesign the roads, and this is where you start to find a lot more of the switchbacks, the hairpin turns. And the best distinction is outside of Idaho Springs, where you've got the old Virginia Canyon Wagon Road, now the Two Brothers Road, and what we call Oh My God Road, which is actually billed as Prospector Trail. But you look at that and say, okay, Wagon Road is the Two Brothers Road, straight up, and probably uphill in the morning and downhill in the afternoon, but it's straight. And then if you wanted to drive a car, you need Prospector Trail or Oh My God Road to swing back and forth. So you do that, and you build the road at Guanella Pass out of Georgetown, and Floyd Hill all of a sudden becomes a windy road instead of a straight one. But about this point in time, there's a real problem with Berthoud Pass, because Berthoud Pass, while you could make it in your car, you probably ended up driving backwards more than you wanted to. Mm-hmm. And so why not take it straight out to what is now the little town of Berthoud Falls? Mm-hmm. And you go straight there, and there is a hairpin turn, and you go straight to the next hairpin turn, mm-hmm. and go back and forth. Mm-hmm. And that Mr. Berthoud kind of... He's ahead of Mr. Loveland on all of this. I don't think it was intentional. I don't think Berthoud saying, ha ha, my road is better.
No.
But the road that bears Berthoud's name and accesses Grand County was the only way pretty much to get into.
And travelable.
And travelable, yeah. So that they are doing that. Now, the preferred route to Summit County, as I said, was Argentine Pass. And it goes up through Waldorf and comes down Peru Creek and all of the little towns over there. Well, if you've ever, I haven't driven or even hiked the downside, what I'll call the downside, of Argentine Pass into Summit, but it's straight and it's steep and it's not very wide. So really it is not going to be a good automobile road, because there isn't a place to make a switchback. You just sort of have to just start here and push and let them go. So that's when Loveland starts getting more attention, and they are looking at redoing that. And again, instead of going up on the Highline Road, they're staying down, and they do lots of passes. Oh, what time is it? Okay. I still have time. Okay.
Yeah, you have plenty of time. I mean, I have little things to read if I run out.
Let's go with it. So at this point in time, we're up to about the 1920s, and you have a new route for Berthoud Pass. It's still the same Summit, still Berthoud Pass, but the way to get there is different, and the same with Mr. Loveland's Pass.
I'd say probably most people in the plains have no idea what a switchback is.
Yeah, it is.
You know.
But you can really...
You don't need them much.
You don't
the
need
them.
Well,
yeah,
not at all.
So then what happens by the 1950s, that we really have a lot of dynamite, and we can go wherever we want. So it's, yeah. But these 1920s roads really are windy and switchbacks, mm-hmm. so that they can do that. And there are one-day trips. They call them circle trips out of Denver. Mm-hmm. And they come up into... So Denver would come up maybe Lookout Mountain Road, and would go to see the buffalo or the bison at mm-hmm. Genesee. And then they'd make their way down into Idaho Springs. And around Georgetown is really jealous, by the way, because Georgetown just makes it too long of a trip. Mm-hmm. So Georgetown starts putting up signs, come on up here and see. Anyway, but it is a change. On the one hand, it's a very definite change when you change from a wagon to a car. You can go faster, but not as fast as we are accustomed to today. My dad was born and raised in Steamboat, and he talks about the two-day trip to Denver, and this would have been in the 1920s. So, you know, you'd leave Steamboat and you'd stop in Empire at Guanella, at the Guanella Ranch. I think Lake Arbor Lodge is where they would stay. But all of a sudden, once you get cars, the whole thing just starts to grow, and it, you know, that you build one road and then you realize that you could build another one over here and you could build a better one over there. And the state imposes a gasoline tax or a charge with each gallon of gas purchased, which we still have today. And I think it becomes highway user tax fund, but I won't get into my Clear Creek County financial assistant role. But there is a real need to get to places. And there was a big fight as to whether or not the main route out of Denver should go over Floyd Hill or should come up the canyon. And the train was still coming up the canyon at that point in time when they were discussing this. And Mr. Floyd's Hill won. So what you don't realize, or what a lot of people don't realize, is the road coming up out of Golden to 119 wasn't built until the 1950s.
Oh,
yeah.
Because my understanding all the time was that they actually built that road more for the trucks so they could pull.
Probably would. It's quite a pull going up. Yeah.
Gotcha.
And there was a major, there was a real need to, I always figured that the Oh My God Road had a lot to do with the opening of the Central City Opera because they could take the train still up to Central, but a lot of people drove and they ended up driving to Idaho Springs and over the Oh My God Road down into Central, and they talk about the trip back where it was just bumper to bumper. Can you imagine bumper to bumper on the Oh My God Road?
We've always had a traffic problem.
Yes.
Bumper to bumper backwards.
Yeah, but they didn't have to go backwards anymore because they had hairpin turns. Oh, anyway, gotcha. Mr. Loveland and Mr. Berthoud keep their name associated with the two roads, and they do end up becoming part of a national road system. And I just that 1910 map where they figure out what gels with what. I think highway number one would be today's I-25, but possibly over to the side a little bit. State highway number two would be today's US-40. Comes up and then goes over Berthoud and comes out in Grand County where it's supposed to and goes to the end of the road. Anyway, we should think of Mr. Loveland and Mr. Berthoud when we go over their passes, but just think of all that happened before them.
Yeah.
There. Do you have any questions?
For sure. That is great. I mean, I love learning that because I've always wondered about it, and especially Floyd Hill.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many people I've asked, Chris. So you are so wonderful. I can't wait to research it now that I know what
it is. Now that you
know
what it is. Yeah, it's Mr. Floyd's Ranch.
And, I mean, I figured it was named after someone who decided, hey, this is the way to go.
Right.
But I didn't know who he was.
But everybody thinks it's a guy named Floyd, and it's his last name.
Yeah,
his first.
Yeah, and everyone thinks it's the first name.
But it really changes, it transitions from, I don't know what the early road was. Was it one of our really steep straight roads? But the one that they start doing right around World War One, into the 1920s, early 30s, is a really windy road that you can see parts of when you're taking the US 40 cutoff. But.
Well, and when you're reading the newspapers, there were accidents. People got killed on that road. Wagon accidents.
Yes.
Yeah. And when did pavement come?
Well, they started paving.
In the 50s,
oh, Sean, we were talking about this earlier. Sean, where are you? up in the archives. I think they don't pave Loveland until maybe the 50s. And Berthoud is open year-round, I think, starting the late 30s, maybe early 40s. I don't know when it's paved. But then you get into ski areas on either side. Mm-hmm. So once they have Berthoud ski area up on top of Berthoud Pass, there's a need to get to it and a need to keep it open. And once you have Arapaho Basin opening on the west side of Loveland Pass, that's post-World War II, so I think that'd be in the 40s that they opened that.
I was born in 1947 and lived in Grant County, and we took Berthoud Pass to come here.
Yeah.
I to get to Denver.
Right.
And it was always paved.
Yeah.
In the 40s. Remember,
you remember? So. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It would make sense that it would be in the 30s, 40s. And, man, they just start, like I say, it's been nonstop. And the more roads you build, the more traffic you get. And everybody is convinced that the next round of improvements will take care of traffic for
the next.
And it doesn't. And it just, you imagine the freedom that they would feel that they had to have their own car and to go up and see Buffalo Bill's grave and the bison at Genesee, and all of those early circle trips would have been quite an adventure.
So I'm intrigued. The bison have been at Genesee for a very long time.
Yeah, it was part of Denver Mountain Parks.
Okay. It still is.
And by the way, I noted, and I think it's a law that was passed by Denver City Council, that they keep the herd down to a minimum because they have limited amount of space. And so they will cull the herd and send a variety of young bison up to the Native American reservations, which I think is really exciting.
Yeah.
That's great. The buffalo can return to the plains, mm-hmm. and they are welcomed as.
Mm-hmm. But I've seen them out there
in a
snowstorm, and they're just fine. You know,
and they just
they have so much fur.
And
it's a beautiful sight.
The whole concept of Denver Mountain Parks, while it's outside, tags on the east end of the county, and certainly Echo Lake and all of that is part of Denver Mountain Parks. But that whole mountain park system was just amazing that it was developed out here in the west, mm-hmm. and early on. But mm-hmm. that's where the bison come from.
Yeah.
As part of, people will drive up there to see it. Hmm. You imagine driving up Lookout Mountain?
Oh, my gosh, for a long time.
Over to see it.
It's still a great drive.
Oh, yeah.
It's a great drive.
And those early Model A's and Model T's, man, they went everywhere, even if they did have to occasionally go backwards.
Well, and the guys that drove them, they could fix them.
Yeah.
You know, so if they broke down, they just fixed them because they weren't so complicated.
They didn't need a computer to open them.
Yeah. As just a side note, after I told my grandson, I said all about Bertha, and he was like, wow. He says, I said, I'm pretty sure there's a hall there or building.
There,
and he goes, yeah, he says, I have a class in that building.
Yeah.
I said, okay, so when you walk in, thank Mr. Berthoud.
Thank Mr. Berthoud, yeah. But those guys who are here and are, I mean, they're adventurers, they're kind of the second tier. I like the guys as well who come out and just, you know, put a pack on their back and start chopping around the mountain, like George Jackson.
I mean, George Jackson, you know, and Golden,
and all those guys.
Yep,
but
it's all good. The history's all good. And
it wouldn't be me.
They each contributed in their own way.
Give me the railroad and an occasional stagecoach ride, and not one that where I have to get out and walk down behind the stage.
It's so fun listening to you, watching you both, because you are so immersed in this history. Mm-hmm. I look at your faces, and I can just see you picturing these men, you know, women doing what they're doing, walking around.
Out here. And,
we're not slighting the women.
No.
The histories I have of the women in Idaho Springs, they are unbelievable.
Yeah.
We need to do that show,
too. We've done some. We need to do more.
Yeah, we have done. There's a lot of them.
Yep.
Yeah. And, you know, each of them are interesting in their own way. But I know we say this, but to me, from when I'm doing the histories and I read the news, there's a lot of equality here because you both had to work at it to make it work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true.
And it's like Mrs. Blummer. She was involved in the business and everything, you know. Mm-hmm. So,
Because it took both of them.
Yeah. But, you know, it is when we talk about the 1859 rush, and then they rush to come up here into this county, and the first thing they do when they're in this county is say, what's there? And they've got to get over this hill and got to get over that hill and back to Marshall Sprague and the Great Gates. You know, what they have to do is start coming up with gates that will allow them to get over to Leadville. And as soon as they're in Leadville, then, well, you know, the southwest part of the state. And it's just, it's amazing. And I enjoy thinking about what it was like as they traveled up and down these hills. I mean, but I can't imagine arriving in Denver before the stage and just saying, I'm supposed to go where?
You know? Well, and for them to even get to Denver, that was really rough.
Yeah. But at least there was a stagecoach.
Yes, there was a stage. I enjoyed that word, gate.
Yeah.
It's so descriptive of what we're
Marshall Sprague,
about.
Great Gates. I will say that he is, he says that Walt Whitman said that the only safe way to get between Idaho Springs and Central City is on your hands and knees, and even that's iffy. Iffy may not be the right word. It's dangerous. But,
yeah. And last I looked, this county is still very mountainous.
Yeah. But, you know,
full of hills.
But you look at Ute Creek and you look at Cascade Creek and you look at York Gulch, Old Stage Road, and they are steep, very steep, direct roads, and they are early wagon roads, mm-hmm. especially Old Stage Road. I mean, that just was, anyway.
Yeah.
But that's where they still are, and that's why you need a four-wheel drive to still get around some parts.
Yeah. So you're talking about my neighborhood, Chris.
Ah,
and,
okay.
I'm just thinking, so Old Stage off of York Gulch.
Yeah.
So they must have then got
and it comes
from
up
there
to, the top.
To Bald Mountain Road.
Yeah,
and then got across
used to be,
Central City that way.
Yeah, there. Oh, I should bring in copies of this one map that you would enjoy. That is that area, and they closed off a road down into Central that still bothers me. But anyway, it's not up to me to go from county to county saying that's really an old road. You should open it up because the old roads were built before. I mean, there weren't subdivisions, there weren't state roads, there weren't actual county roads. They were just roads that were built across the public domain. And in the back in Congress in 1866, they said the right-of-way for construction of roads across the public domain not otherwise reserved is hereby granted. So you want to build a road? Build it. And it's a road.
Yeah. Passage.
And then if you take a mining claim over that, that road is still there. But anyway, not every county commissioner in every county wants me to show up on their doorstep saying, that's a road. But yes, definitely your neck. Okay, are we running out of time? Not good.
Yeah. Got any kind of final thoughts of
I like
building roads?
Yeah. See, I researched the roads a lot because I worked for the county. And as I was just saying, the roads were built across the public domain, and they were built before, a lot of them were built before there was even a county. So we had to determine which came first, the road or the use of the land about it. I mean, think about the Santa Fe Trail, and you know that about two-thirds of the way out along the Santa Fe Trail, somebody put a ranch, and then they said, you can't come across my property. Mm-hmm. I mean, you just know that's going to happen. So a lot of my job was figuring out when was the road built and how long has it been in existence. It's always – actually, it's kind of why I figured I still had a job 25, 30 years later. But it's – in counties like this, there are wonderful roads, and some of them have now become just hiking trails that, again, are important for people to wander about.
Yeah. Well, it's fun because a lot of what you're talking about still exists on York Gulch.
Yes. Oh, York Gulch. Anyway, we could almost do a whole show on York Gulch.
Oh, I'd love that.
York Gulch. Where they?
Well, I told her, I said, we should do some shows on gulches.
Yeah, well, York Gulch.
Each one has their history.
They wanted the road, and then they didn't want the road, and then they did want the road, and then it's
Well, and the interesting thing is that our community up York Gulch is all off-grid.
Yep.
So there's power to the firehouse that was also built by, and here's a call from my dear mother, which, sorry, Mom, you're going to have to wait a minute.
Okay.
But otherwise, everyone else up there is off-grid.
Yep.
So with these power outages that seem to be plaguing us, our community does just fine.
Fine, because you're already off-grid.
We are all off-grid up there. But there are lots of old roads.
There are mining claims where Clear Creek Mousie would just kind of change the overlap.
Well, yeah, yeah, it's the same as the mining claims because, yep, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Those maps, oh, my gosh, and well, the placers going here. And it,
but that I understand, but then yeah, you get a 20th century developer who says, well, it makes more sense if the overlap is yours, not yours. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No.
Yes.
Well, that's when you go to the BLM and see who has the oldest
and Forest
patent.
Service. That's right. Yeah. Been there, done that a lot.
I just want to make it work for their purpose.
Yeah. Well, they want people to be able to, and a lot of these roads too. It's public access until it gets to my property, and then it's nothing. And you know, you can't quite have both ways.
No. No.
Oh,
yeah.
Feisty person that I am. Anyway, hi. Did it's you want to talk about Devil's Gate History Club coming up this weekend?
Yes, you had mentioned there was a program Friday night.
A program Friday night at the Community Center in Georgetown. It starts at 7 o'clock. It will be Sean Babbs from the County Archives who will talk about some of the Sanborn postcards that are roundabout that actually give us a wonderful insight into early tourism, 20th century tourism in the county. The postcards, well, actually Kodak at one point in time developed the process where you could just take a picture and make it into a postcard. But Mr. Sanborn was around for a long time, and he took some wonderful shots, and Sean will explain it much better than I did just there. And by the way, we were talking about why is it called Devil's Gate. And Devil's Gate was a bridge across the creek that actually was there before the train comes in. And it's called Devil's Gate because it's just a narrow pinch point in the creek.
Huh.
So they called it Devil's Gate. And now the high bridge is also known as the Devil's Gate Viaduct.
Wow. Can you still see it?
No, it's gone. I know where it was. Well,
okay.
Yeah, I know where it was. It's the road that now has been built up on underneath the high bridge took out a lot of it. You can see where it pokes out on the other side.
I see.
On the far side.
Yeah. Well, such a wonderful conversation. Lou, I'm wondering if you have any final thoughts for us today.
Yeah. Not really. We don't have time, I don't think, anyway. But, Chris, I loved all the information you gave us.
Yeah.
Well, good.
I did not know most of it, and it's
great.
Totally interesting to me.
Well,
so,
thank you.
I'm pretty sure it was pretty interesting.
I hope it was
to a lot of people.
To other people,
yeah,
too. I just think, you know, we assume you just drive out, you know, I-70 out of Denver, and of course you can go over the mountains, and man, you couldn't. And that's why I say I just would have just sat in Denver like, there's a nice place to stay.
Well, and I kind of laugh because, you know, people, my cousins included, that come from Kansas or whatever, and they're like, oh, my God, road is so... And I say, oh, we love it.
Yeah.
We love that road.
Oh, the first time I drove up to Horsetooth Reservoir, I went white knuckles. You know, I grew up in Rochester, New York, and... this road is so steep.
Now you're over it, aren't you?
I'm over
and
it.
And you love it, right?
Yeah.
Well, Floyd Hill these days sometimes can be as scary and hairy as it used to be.
Oh, my gosh.
These days.
Scarier.
Yeah, but they continue. Because roads continually improve. And it starts with the first car, I swear. And by the time you hit the 20s and then you get the Depression years, where it's public money improving roads, but it just never slows down. It just keeps going and going.
Yeah. So very interesting. Well, and Chris, you mentioned to me that there will be a melodrama.
There's going to be in Silver Plume. Yes.
In April?
In April. It starts the weekend after Easter and will be Saturday and Sunday for 3 weeks.
So I'm going to try to get one of these registers
to join me. That'd be great.
To talk about the melodrama, because I don't think we've had one for a couple years.
There's been a melodrama, know that you've had somebody down here speaking. And what they're doing is the program that they'll be putting on is Editor in Cheat.
Oh,
so it's a good show. I remember it.
Very good. Well, we'll try to line up that show. Thank you all for listening today. We will be with the History Women again in April. Can't wait for that.
Oh, yeah.
And join us next Wednesday for What's Upstream. Be safe out there, everyone. Take good care of each other. Thank you.
What's coming up?